Thanks for listening to this podcast. I'm Bob Kinzel, co-host of Vermont Edition. Just wanted to let you know that this has been edited for brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. I don't know if you've heard about this yet, but there's a big astronomical event happening next week, a solar eclipse. Just kidding. Everyone on Earth has heard about it, and maybe it's even a big thing in extraterrestrial communities, too. Even though Vermont's not getting the totality of the eclipse, it's still something that's exciting to people in our region, especially to our guests today. Mark Breen is senior meteorologist at the Fairbanks Museum and Planetarium. You hear him on VPR's Eye on the Sky weather forecasts, and he also hosts the Eye on the Night Sky program on stargazing. Hi, Mark. Nice to have you with us. All right, we'll see if we can get Mark. I hope we do. But I know we have somebody else because John O'Meara is sitting right next to me here in the studio in Colchester. He's an astronomer and chair of the physics department at St. Michael's College. And you may have heard him a few times on our podcast for kids called But Why. John, nice to have you with us.
Great to be here again.
And Mark, do I hear you in my headphones?
I can hear you.
Fabulous. And we finally hear you too. I'm glad that Mark and John are here today to share their enthusiasm and their expertise. So, John O'Meara, you've heard of this thing called the eclipse that's happening next week?
Yeah, somebody told me about it.
Yeah.
It's a new thing. It's
big
pretty
deal,
cool.
Yeah. Not a big deal?
Oh, it's always a big deal. I mean, eclipses are great for a variety of reasons, but I think my favorite reason is that it's just it's a wonderful proof that astronomy works.
What do you mean?
Well, what I mean, it's just we can track the motion of objects on the sky and predict when something happens, and then lo and behold, it happens when we predict it. And in this case, it's a pretty cool thing to see, and so people get excited, and it's just a wonderful proof of concept.
So if it doesn't happen, we have you to blame.
No, we can blame Mark.
We can blame you if it doesn't happen.
Oh no, unless you can't see it, in which case I guess that's a weather concern.
Yeah, actually, I was thinking about that the other day. We've all had so much hype and so much excitement around the country about this eclipse. What if the weather's bad? What if it's cloudy? Mark, what are we going to do?
I guess you'll have to do some remote viewing on some sort of mobile device or something on your computer. I have been posting on the Eye on the Sky Facebook page a projected image, a forecast of the sky conditions, so you can actually check that out. But right now, the projection is actually pretty favorable for us.
Ooh, that's good. So we may be able to see. And what is it that we're going to be able to see in Vermont, Mark?
Well, the moon will cover a range of the sun. It'll range from about 64-65% up in the far northeast kingdom, up in the eastern townships, and a little bit more than 70% as you get down to Bennington, Williamstown, Massachusetts, and over toward Albany, New York. So we'll figure on about two-thirds of the sun being covered up by the moon, so you'll end up with a rather wide crescent sun at its midpoint, which will be pretty close to 2:30 in the afternoon.
We have a lot of people who've been sharing with us that they're going to go somewhere where they can see the whole eclipse, or you know that they've made special plans to travel, and I have to admit that I'm actually kind of jealous of them. I have this secret fantasy that maybe I'll just hop on a plane and go somewhere, although I think it's probably all the tickets are sold out. But is it worth it? I mean, John O'Meara, do you think seeing the totality, seeing this entire eclipse is a more powerful experience than seeing what we're going to have here in Vermont?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think having the sun go completely away for a couple of minutes is both awe-inspiring, potentially a little bit scary, even a 99% eclipse is still 1% the brightness of the sun, and the sun's pretty dang bright. So absolute totality is something I've never seen. I'm kind of sad to be missing it this time.
Yeah, because you're not going to be in the country.
Because I'm not even going to be in the country, but mark your calendars, 2024, Burlington, Vermont will see a total eclipse of the sun. And so we'll be able to experience it here. But I really look forward to watching online. I'll stay up for the right amount of time to watch it all online. In addition to what Mark had mentioned, you can also go to eclipse.AAS.org, which is the American Astronomical Society website, all about it. And you can get all sorts of information. I'm sure there's going to be plenty of live streams of it happening across the country. And it's really just going to be a fun thing for those who can see it.
One of our listeners, going by the name Nice Doggy, posts, having taught astronomy for some time now and seen a number of eclipses, I remain astonished at the misconceptions so many hold of the events, in particular the notion that a partial eclipse is just, quote, a little less of a total eclipse, that a total is just a dark disk with sunshine around it. Once people actually witness a full total eclipse and actually see the complex, delicate, and spectacular structure of the corona, do they finally understand what a different experience it is? This will be especially notable to audience members who may have missed this eclipse, but are poised to see the one approaching in 2024, which sashays through eastern New York State and upstate Vermont. Mark, do you think people have a misconception about what an eclipse is or why it's so exciting?
Well, I guess unless you've actually experienced one, you don't get that sense of the that huge shadow of the moon actually covering a portion of the Earth. I've seen some great images from space, the International Space Station, taking images looking down on the Earth and actually catching the shadow of the moon on the Earth. It also, as John mentioned, having, just a hint of sun around it is not the same as it being absolutely completely eclipsed. And personally, I have yet to witness that.
So are you going to be somewhere special, Mark, for
I'm going to be in the backyard of the museum.
So you're not going to see the totality either.
No, I'm not traveling for that, although I have been long anticipated, having been here at the museum for quite a few years, long anticipating this event in 2024.
So you've already made plans for 2024.
Oh, yes.
We have some questions from listeners about how to safely view the eclipse. And, there's been a lot of talk about safety glasses. And in fact, lots of talk about fraudulent safety glasses, eclipse glasses that you can get that aren't actually good for viewing the sun, and you got to be careful of those. And Cliff says, we hope to travel where we can see the eclipse, but unfortunately have waited too long to buy viewing glasses because now we cannot find any, even on Amazon. Any ideas where we could still get some? John?
Well, I think if you go to eclipse.AAS.org, they do have a list of vendors, and they may still have some. But the other thing that I would say is that there are a variety of different ways of viewing this that don't involve wearing safety glasses and looking at the sun. Some as simple as just poking a small pinhole in a piece of paper and looking at the projection of it on another piece of paper behind it. Or even more fun is to take a cheese grater, and that's a lot of little holes, so you can look at a lot of little eclipses all at once. And this is totally safe to do. If you have a set of binoculars, you can use them to project the eclipse on a piece of paper. But I tend to shy away from that because you definitely don't want to put the binoculars near your eyes anywhere during this. But there are a variety of ways that don't involve safety glasses, if you can't get them, to actually look at the disk of the sun and the shadow and the moon across it, eclipsing it. So if you can't get glasses, fear not, there are ways to view it.
Mary Williams, our director, says a lot of local libraries have them, although I don't know what you would do during the eclipse if somebody else is using the glasses. If everybody gets like 10 seconds, but you could check out what's happening at your library.
Well, in the case of a partial eclipse, it lasts for quite a while. Totality is the thing that only lasts for a few minutes. So if you go to the library, the total of, length of the eclipse is well over 2 hours. And so there should be time for everybody to see something.
Okay. Brad says, eclipse safety notice, auto-darkening welding helmets are not safe for viewing the eclipse. Auto-darkening helmets are not dark enough. They typically only reach number 10, and if you reach number 12, but you need number 14 to safely observe the sun. It is also not safe to wear sunglasses inside your welding helmet. Welding helmets or goggles are only safe if fitted with number 14 filters, which are usually a special order item. I did not know that welding helmets were a topic of conversation for what people could use, but that is good advice, Brad. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Let's go to Tony calling in from Montpelier. Hi, Tony. Go right ahead.
Hi. I just had a quick question. I remember hearing or seeing that the next eclipse wouldn't be for several hundred years, and then people saying that the next eclipse will be in 2024. Is there a different type of eclipse that is coming up?
Tony, thanks for the call. Mark Breen?
No, it's not so much that there's a different type of eclipse. The eclipse in 2024, which will be in April, goes across northern parts of our region. It actually runs across the Adirondacks. The southern edge of the eclipse, total eclipse, will go from about Middlebury over to just south of Montpelier, just south of Route 2 over to about Lancaster, New Hampshire. It goes all the way north to Montreal. So areas south of that will not see a total eclipse. And for Rutland in specifically, because I've actually been looking at this, I think the last eclipse specifically in Rutland was back in the 1300s. And there will not be an eclipse in Rutland specifically until the year 2381.
Whoa. So is that what Tony's hearing? Because I, you know, I hear things too, or you read things that say it's been 99 years since X. And is it just that it's been a long time since so much of this country was going to get right in the path of the totality mark?
Well, this is the first total eclipse that has crossed the U.S. mainland since 1979, so it has been a while. And the last one to cross the country in a similar fashion to this was back in 1918. Now, locally, there was an eclipse that crossed through areas from about Montreal and Montpelier East back in August of 1932. But then you'd have to go back to 1806, and that only covered southern parts of our region, Bennington and Windham counties, and the very southern edges of Rutland and Windsor counties over into southern New Hampshire. So it's all depending on exactly where this track takes place. You know, here in St. Johnsbury, for example, it was a total eclipse in 1932, and we will see that total eclipse again in 2024.
So there could be some people who have seen both or will have seen both. There's that possibility is out there. That'd be pretty cool.
Yes.
And there's a variety of people who are eclipse chasers who will go on cruises because most of the time the total eclipse will, say, go over the ocean. Most of the Earth is covered in oceans or in very obscure places, and people will chase it in airplanes and this, that, and the other thing. So, you know, you can chase these things just about every year, but most of the time it's not in an easy place to see.
Let's go to Tim, who's calling from Hyde Park. Hi, Tim. You're going to see the eclipse?
I am.
Wow.
My family released me to go chase this eclipse, so I thought carefully about how to maximize every good opportunity to see an eclipse with as little crowding or traffic hassle as possible. So my plan is I'm flying to Sioux Falls, South Dakota on Saturday, arrive at about 2:15 in the afternoon, rent a car, drive from there to somewhere, Nebraska, central or western Nebraska, to get onto the ground track. And I've got the map. I've got sort of the entire eclipse ground track mapped out just in case I can't get a signal for Wi-Fi or cell phone, and I'm ready. I've got solar filters for the camera and glasses. And I should say, this is my first eclipse that I've ever actually tried to chase, and I'm a little nervous and very excited. I understand there's a lot of excellent phenomena that occurs just prior to the total obscuration, what's known as C2, shadow bands and whatnot that occur just before C2 and just after C3. And I'm going to hopefully set up on a pale concrete where I can see these light phenomena as they occur, but we'll see about that. I should mention that if any viewers are interested, I have one seat available in the car for anybody who would like to join me. The caveat is you have to get to Sioux Falls, South Dakota by 2:30 on Saturday.
Tim, why? Why are you so excited about this? This is the first time you've chased an eclipse, so why is this something that made you say, I have to be there?
I think you just said it. I understand that the total eclipse is a moment that's breathtaking. I have to see that. I've never seen it, so this is going to be my first shot to do it. And yeah, as soon as I made plans, I learned that there's an April 2024 eclipse. It's actually going to have a total obscuration of 4 minutes, which is an astounding eclipse over northern Vermont. On the other hand, you can never look 7 years ahead with any certainty, and the April weather tends to be a little bit sketchy in Vermont, but I'll drive if I have to get to clear weather for that one as well, if I'm still here, knock on wood.
Tim, have you looked at what the weather is likely to be in Nebraska? Are you sure you've got clear skies?
I have. I've been looking at the 10-day forecast, and now I'm looking at the actual 7-day National Weather Service forecasts, and Monday, God, I almost hate to say this to jinx something good, but the weather forecast is looking great right now. I'm knocking on wood as I say that.
I have my fingers crossed for you, Tim. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us. Actually, if you stay on the line, our call screener may want to get your information. We may call you on the 21st of Vermont or in Nebraska, see what you're seeing. Thanks for calling in. Listeners.
Don't call me.
No, we
during
won't.
During the eclipse.
That's right. We won't call you during the eclipse. You won't answer.
But I'd be happy to give a report afterwards. You bet.
Fabulous.
I'll hang on the line.
Thank you. I can't believe that Mark and John, neither of you are going anywhere. I mean, of all the people, John's going to be in Australia. He's missing all of it. Mark, I mean, at least you get to see some of it. But, you know, this is not so exciting to you that it just forced you to go somewhere?
I guess, you know, in terms of going someplace to view it, I don't know. I haven't caught the bug, so to say. I haven't seen a total eclipse. And yet I know, actually, there is somebody in our listening area who's quite the eclipse chaser. Dr. Jay Pasikoff, he's a professor down at Williams College, has seen 33 eclipses.
Wow. So I guess it doesn't get old.
No, I think once you do, see one or two, you can easily get kind of addicted to it, so to say.
It's a complete failure planning on my part.
Yeah, Australia, you're not going to get any of it. I mean, I'm really disappointed in you.
Well, I'm just going to have to look through the ground and sigh. You know?
Christy is calling in from Franconia, New Hampshire. Hi, Christy. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. I have two thoughts. One is, I just looked it up when you brought up astrology, that the new moon is happening 5 minutes after the eclipse starts.
Ooh, what does that mean?
And that's, I don't know. I'm asking these smart men. All I know is that the new moon is not in Leo anymore. Now we've moved into Virgo. So that's happening basically at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really understand all that, but I find it interesting. And the other thought is, why with an eclipse? When we have earthquakes, they're usually with an eclipse.
So you've seen a connection between earthquakes and eclipses?
Yeah, I've been charting it for a while.
Huh. All right, well, let's...
That when there's an eclipse, often, an earthquake, and I'll look it up, and there's an eclipse.
Huh. All right. Well, let's see if Mark or John know anything about either of those things, Christy. So, John, you're sitting across from me, so you get it first.
Well, in terms of solar eclipses, it will always be a new moon at solar eclipses. We observe the moon in reflected sunlight, and so the orientation of the Earth, Sun, and Moon is such that the moon is passing right in between the Earth and the Sun, and so we would call that new moon anyway.
But astrologically.
Astrologically, I'm going to punt to Mark. It's not my cup of tea, but I say that because I'm an Ophiuchus.
What about this idea that there might be earthquakes that correlate with eclipses?
This is certainly outside my field of expertise, but I would say that earthquakes happen multiple times a day across the planet, and so I would say that there could, be a correlation between earthquakes and just about anything because they happen so frequently. And so I'd be a bit skeptical of that one. But again, it's not something that I look at.
Mark?
So first of all, in terms of the astrological idea, I too am not terribly well versed in any meanings connected with, new moon being in a particular constellation and so forth.
Or Mercury in retrograde.
Right. Can't tell you too much about that, although I'm familiar with the zodiac signs or what people are familiar with as the horoscope signs in the sky. They're great constellations to look at. But the other note about eclipses in earthquakes, of course, the same idea that John talked about, we have a new moon at the time of a solar eclipse. It has to be that way because that's when the moon and the sun are both in the same direction. So both of them have a gravitational pull, and there have been some surveys. I think the USGS Geological Survey actually indicated there is some connection or correlation between high tides and earthquakes, at least on some of the shallow faults and so forth. It's not necessarily a strong connection, but perhaps a slightly better than even sort of chance that there would be an earthquake during a new moon or during an eclipse as opposed to other times.
Well, Christy, thanks for the call. Appreciate hearing from you. Let's go to Anthony calling in from Montpelier. Hi, Anthony. You're on.
Hello, Jane. I have to say I'm a fan of your show and also of Mark's Eye on the Sky. I've been listening for a long time. I just wanted to report on my trip down south. My wife and I are leaving on Friday. We're going to stay at Asheville, North Carolina, and then we're going to drive into the, I don't think I'm pronouncing this right, but the Nantahala National Forest, which is right in the path of totality. We're not sure how far we're going to get, so we're going to have our bicycles on the car, and we're going to pull over wherever we have to and pack a lunch, and hopefully it's not going to rain.
Ah, good luck, Anthony. Thanks for letting us know. That's so exciting. I'm excited to hear about people making all these travel plans. Let's go to Roger in Waterbury, speaking of travel plans. Hey, Roger.
Hi there, Jane.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that not only am I flying out to Denver on Thursday and then flying my daughter down from Vancouver, British Columbia, and then we'll be driving from Denver up into Nebraska to see the eclipse. But I also saw the eclipse in 1979 when I was living in Seattle. And that's really the reason that I'm going this time. That was just a shockingly beautiful event that I never thought I would see again, and I'm hoping this one will measure up to it.
Oh, Roger, very cool, and what a neat thing to have a meeting with your daughter in Nebraska. Say hi to Tim while you're out there. You guys may cross paths. I guess you don't need his extra seat in his car, but you'll both be in Nebraska. That's so great. Let's go to Peter in Hinesburg. Hi, Peter. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. I suppose I only have one question. I know that scientists are hoping to get the answer during this eclipse, but I guess I'd like to know what the hypothesis is, at least, behind why the corona of the sun is so much hotter than the surface temperature.
Hmm.
And I suppose that's the only question I have.
Peter, thanks for the question. John O'Meara?
This is a great question that's been plaguing us for a while. So very briefly, you know, the sun is not just a happy ball of fire sitting in space. It's got many layers on both the inside and the outside. We see what we call the surface of the sun, but beyond that, we have what we call the chromosphere and the corona. And the chromosphere and the corona are usually only seen during total eclipses because you need to block out the rest of the sun, at least to be able to see it in with your eyes or with a telescope. The corona is at millions of degrees Kelvin, which is extremely hot. And we would expect normally that as you get farther away from the sun, any gas and plasma associated with the sun should go down in temperature. But in fact, it spikes back up when you get into the corona. And we know this has something to do with the magnetic field of the sun. But the exact physics of why it is so hot and what it does, how it does what it does are still open questions. And part of the reasons why we do want to study the sun during eclipses. A fun historical note is that, you know, a total solar eclipse can also be used to test Einstein's theory of general relativity. In fact, the first actual test of Einstein's general theory of relativity happened during a total solar eclipse when they made an expedition to photograph the stars back behind where the sun was supposed to be. And because of the slight bending of light due to slight distortions in space-time predicted by general relativity, the positions of the stars were slightly different than where they should be. And it was a wonderful verification of Einstein's theory.
So, John, what are astronomers and scientists going to be doing when the rest of us are just gazing up at the sky with our eclipse glasses on? How do they actually do that work to study it?
Typically, what they'll do is they'll take telescopes that have specific filters to try to isolate specific atoms, usually hydrogen. And if they're trying to study prominences on the surface of the sun, these are these extended loops that come off, or try to study, you know, the corona itself. Normally, the corona can only be seen in X-rays because it's so hot. But now, for a brief period of time, once the sun is blocked, you know, they can actually try to study in an optical light too. So they're going to try to take as detailed pictures as possible as they can of the corona. And all the other regions that were otherwise just too faint to be seen.
Let's go to Bob in Braintree. Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane. Love your program. I'm a photographer, and one would think I might be really looking toward the visual aspect of looking up to the heavens. But I had an experience of a partial eclipse as a child that was very close to the full eclipse, and the experience of having nature respond to what's happening in the sky, to have bats come out, or maybe not in Vermont now, but maybe the hooting of an owl or the howling of a wolf, birds gathering and insects. You can just feel the sunset and then the deep night and then the dawn coming, and you feel all of creation responding in the thrall of the experience of the eclipse, which is not just a visual thing. It's a sensational experience that involves all of the senses.
Bob, what are you going to be looking at? So you'll be looking down, not up. What are you looking for?
Sadly, I was going to be in Kansas City with my mother, but that trip has been called off, and so I'm going to be just walking in nature. I think the place to experience an eclipse is definitely not in an urban area unless you have a park. I'm jealous as all get out of Anthony, who's going to be riding his bike in the middle of nowhere. It just sounds perfect. That would be my choice.
Oh, yeah, that does sound perfect. Well, Bob, I hope it's a wonderful experience nonetheless. And let's go to Debbie in Bethel. Hi, Debbie. What are you thinking about?
Hi. Actually, my experience, or what I was calling about, is very similar to Bob's, because I remember a eclipse in the early 1960s. I was at camp on an island in Lake Winnipesaukee, and the same thing, except the waves became very quiet, the birds all became quiet. It just was such an amazing experience, besides the darkness, and we all got to look through the special glasses very briefly, but the whole overall experience to me was amazing. I was curious why that happens, why the waves get quiet anyway. I can understand the birds thinking it's nighttime, but the waves really amazed me. Just the little lapping waves just all got quiet.
Debbie, that's very cool. Thank you for sharing that. Lots of experiences of people calling in. So we'll talk about other stuff in a little while, but let's stick with our eclipse experiences, eclipse questions, and memories at the moment. Scott is with us from Hyde Park. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Jane. Boy, everybody took my thunder. I was in California back in 79 and chased the eclipse, the total eclipse, up to Oregon. And true to Oregon's temperament, it was cloudy. But it got very dark. The birds stopped singing. It was and the dog started howling. And I would definitely concur that being in nature is the place to be.
Where are you going to be this
time? In case it's a cloudy day.
Scott, yeah. Where are you going to be this time?
Oh, I'm just going to be here in Hyde Park. I'm looking forward to the one in 2024.
Yeah, and here is still pretty good. 70% is, I mean, you know, that's nothing to look down on. Let's hear from Kip calling in from Lincoln. Hi, Kip. Go right ahead.
Hi.
Hi. I actually have exactly the same experience. I lived on the Oregon coast in 79, and the ocean got really quiet, and it had been stormy earlier, and it quieted right down. Birds got quiet, and the dogs barked exactly the same thing. And it was the giddiest, one of the most exhilarating moments of my life, actually. And even though it was totally cloudy, it was still a phenomenal experience.
Huh. So are you looking forward to next week then, Kip?
I am. I'll be here in Vermont, but I'm still glad to see part of it.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Thanks for sharing that. Now let's go to Abigail. Abigail is on the line with us from Goshen. Hi, Abigail. What's your question?
If you are watching a partial or a solar eclipse and you have the special glasses, and then if you don't put them in front of the camera lens, will it still damage the camera?
All right, so you have your glasses on. So in your eyes are protected, but you want to take a picture of the eclipse with your camera. Mark, is your camera going to be okay?
You'd have to ask a photographer about that. Because cameras are designed to take in light, I would think, and again, you'd have to confirm this with a photographer, but I would think that it would be okay for the camera.
Yeah, Abigail, that's my assumption too. Your camera is not going to be damaged. The question is just, can you get it at the right setting so that it can take the picture that you want to see, the thing that you're seeing through your glasses? And so you're going to have to fiddle around and maybe get some help to do some reading to check how to actually, if you have a camera that has manual settings, so you can set it yourself and you can put it on a tripod so it's nice and still, then you could point it up at the sky, and you won't have to worry about damaging the camera. You just need to worry about how to make sure that you can get the image that you want so that then you can have that photograph that matches what's in your brain that you saw in the eclipse. I hope it goes really well for you. Thank you very much for calling in.
Good luck.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to Lauren in Reigate. Lauren, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi. I was just going to say, I was at my eye doctor's yesterday for a checkup, and they actually have the correct type of glasses there that you can get for free. So I guess if people are looking, they can check with their eye doctors.
Ah, that's a good suggestion, and I guess your eye doctor ought to know what's legit and not. That's very cool. Lee is with us from J New York. Hi, Lee. You have an eclipse question, too?
Yes, I do. I also watched the eclipse in the late 70s, and we watched it off the ocean off New Jersey, and the same thing occurred. The ocean calmed down, and we watched it without having glasses on. We watched it through a mirror.
Hmm.
We aimed the mirror at the eclipse and watched the mirror, and we were told that this is the a safe way of watching it. I'm just wondering if this is true.
Lee, thanks for the question. John, is it safe to look at the mirror?
Well, I mean, when the eclipse is in totality, it's actually for that brief period of time, it's safe to actually look at where the position of the sun is.
And you can look with your actual eyes. Yeah.
I think, you know, if you're trying to look at the partial eclipse, I'd still recommend a projection method, like with just a simple pinhole in a piece of paper, and that's going to be the absolute safest way because the mirror is only going to cut down the amount of light hitting your eye by a little bit. And so I'd still recommend either using the glasses or a projection method.
Right. So, Lee, if you're in J New York or in Vermont for the eclipse, we're not going to get the totality, so probably safer to stay away from looking through the mirror. And,
yes, and Jane, I just mentioned that the idea with the mirror in terms of using it is to actually cover the mirror and just leave a small spot, say smaller than a dime on it, and let the light reflect off of that small spot and onto something else. So you're not actually looking at the mirror, but where the sunlight bounces from the mirror onto something, especially if it's in a little shady spot where you can get the light to appear just a little bit better. That is a safe method to view the eclipse with.
Right. So you're not actually looking at the mirror. You're using the mirror as that projection to get that sort of that pinhole effect. Got it. You're listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and I'm here today with Mark Breen, senior meteorologist at the Fairbanks Museum and Planetarium, and you know him from Eye on the Sky and Eye on the Night Sky, and John O'Meara, an astronomer and chair of the physics department at St. Michael's College. And we are sharing enthusiasm, expertise, not on my part, but on theirs, and questions and what's happening on August 21st with the solar eclipse. We're going to get a partial eclipse here in Vermont, although, as we've heard, lots of Vermonters traveling to places where they're going to be able to see a total eclipse. Let's go to Jacob, calling in from Montreal. Hi, Jacob.
Hey, how are you guys?
Great, thanks.
So I just had a question about, I guess it's a very distant sort of solar eclipse in relation to Earth, where there's this star that's been discovered that has its light dipping significantly lower than it should when, a planet passes in front. And I know that experts are a little bit, confused as to what could be happening, and they're not really sure that it's definitely not a planet. It would be way bigger than what they're expecting. But I was just wondering, what are you guys' thoughts on this? Because I know some people are saying, oh, it could be an alien megastructure. It could be a bundle of comets. It's something that we haven't really seen before.
Jacob,
and do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, thanks for the call. I know John O'Meara has thoughts on this because he told us he was interested in maybe talking about this potential alien megastructure.
Well, I was actually fortunate enough the last time I was at the Keck Observatory in Hawaii on the summit of Mauna Kea, they noticed the light from this star beginning to dip again. This is called Tabby's star, and like you said, it's a very interesting object in that the light from the star is dipping in very strange ways that aren't usual. I mean, light dips from stars for a variety of reasons. But Tabby's star seems somewhat unique and very, very perplexing. And originally got a lot of hype because, you know, one possible explanation is an alien megastructure that's only partially built. And so as it rotates by, the amount of light goes down from the star. We've pretty much excluded that one for a variety of reasons.
Darn.
I know I'm really unhappy that it's not an alien megastructure. megastructure, but we're pretty sure it's not. But we still don't know what it is. And so
then how do you know it's not an alien megastructure?
Well, because if it were made out of just about anything, it would also radiate a lot of infrared light. And we've observed this star in infrared, and it's probably not that.
Okay. Well, you probably know more about it than I do. Go ahead.
But it was rather exciting to get this sort of alert call, because we had a different science program entirely in mind. And then they just called up and said, hey, Tabby star is starting to go down again. Please observe it. And I'm like, yeah, you better believe I'm observing Tabby star. And so we sent that data back to those folks, and lots of observatories got online that night and in the following couple of nights. And they're processing that data right now, trying to understand what it is. The caller correctly identified some of the candidates for this. I think the most promising candidate right now is that a planet was basically disintegrated, and its material is starting to fall onto the star. It's getting ripped apart and falling onto the star and causing these erratic changes in brightness.
You know, when you say that a lot of observatories immediately, you know, that you all go online, you're all looking at the same thing, is there a lot of competition, or does it feel like a pretty collegial place? Because obviously everybody wants to be the institution or the group of scientists who discovers something. But, you know, it also sounds like there's a lot of collaboration.
Yeah, it's a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B. I mean, the Earth is spinning around, and so certain things on the sky are observable from certain parts on the Earth only at certain times. And in the case of Tabby's star, I think it captured just about all of our interest, because we just don't know what's going on. And I think in that regard, there's a lot more sense of collegiality and just flat-out interest in the community to figure out what's going on with this thing. Certain other things, yeah, people want to be first. But in this case, plenty of people have been observing it. There's no first there. It's more of, we need to do a lot more observing to understand what's happening.
We have a photographer on the line with us now. Peggy is calling in from Hartford. So, Abigail, I hope you're still listening. Peggy, share your thoughts with us.
Hi. Hi. Mr. Breen and the other gentleman said they weren't sure about the photography question, taking a picture with at the partial eclipse. If you're wearing eclipse glasses, I am not positive, but because I wasn't planning to photograph it, but I don't think that's correct, because the camera gathers light, and there's a lot of it coming in, and I think it would damage the sensor. I believe I have read that, so I think she should check other sources. And then another quick comment for Tim in North Dakota. Sorry to be such a wet blanket, but I'm going to Idaho, and I was going to drive up from Salt Lake City and just set up by the side of the road, and I have read, don't do that, because you could get kicked off at the last minute. So now I'm looking into Bureau of Land Management lands and National Forest to see if maybe that would be all right. Thanks a lot.
Peggy, thanks for your call. Appreciate your expertise. And, yeah, you should join. I think it might have been Anthony who is going to be maybe bicycling in a national park. That sounds like a great idea. Louise is with us from Shrewsbury. Hi, Louise. What are you thinking about?
Hi there.
Hi.
I was in Cambodia, in Phnom Penh, in 2009 on a Habitat for Humanity build. And we had just finished a build and went to Siem Reap to see the Angkor Wat ruins. And while we were there, we started to see there was an orphanage that was next door that had all deaf children in it. And all of a sudden, there was a commotion, like a turmoil of kids. And they came over and they grabbed our arms and they pulled us over. And we also noticed that there was a darkening of the sky, but we didn't know what was going on. And no one was speaking English, and they weren't speaking. And they had a motorcycle helmet that had a shaded
visor
on it, and they were holding it up in the air and looking up at the sky and pointing, and handed us the helmet, and we got to see a solar eclipse through a motorcycle helmet in Cambodia. It was really a wonderful experience to be then in the streets with everybody pointing up, and no matter what country they were from or what language they spoke or, you know, where they were from, we were all pointing at the sky in amazement. It was just great.
That sounds like a wonderful experience, and what a wonderful memory, Louise. Thank you for sharing that. Mark Breen, I know we all have eclipse fever, but beyond the eclipse, what else should we be looking at in the sky this month in August?
Well, we've actually got a couple of great planets to view. Jupiter is kind of finishing up its journey in terms of viewing in the evening skies, although it's certainly still out there. You know, basically, as it's getting dark, say quarter of 9 o'clock or so, Jupiter's pretty low over in the west, but due south at that same time, and also fairly low in the sky, is the planet Saturn. So our two largest planets, they're there for viewing, and that's kind of nice. But there are also some fascinating missions that are taking place at both of those planets right now.
You know, speaking of missions, John O'Meara, we can do another space show at another time, but I want to talk about, or have you talk about, Cassini, because this is actually, it's ending its mission. We have very little time left for Cassini, very little time left in the show, but what about Cassini?
Yeah, that's one of the two missions Mark was alluding to. Well, at 8:07 a.m. Eastern Time on September 15th, the Cassini mission will end when Cassini will enter Saturn's atmosphere and burn up in the upper atmosphere of Saturn. And this has been an absolutely wonderful mission that has completely, fundamentally changed our understanding both of Saturn as a planet, but also all of its moons. There's so many exciting, interesting moons. And the reason why they're ending the mission is one of fuel. The probe is running out of the fuel that it needs to make orbit corrections. And they want to make absolutely sure that Cassini can't hit one of two moons of Saturn. One's called Titan and the other's called Enceladus. And both of those moons are very, very exciting to astronomers because Enceladus has geysers that we want to understand, and Titan's atmosphere is much like the Earth's early atmosphere. And so both of those planets, very low chance, could harbor life, and we want to make sure that there's no chance we can pollute it in any way. So unfortunately, the mission must end, but it's been a huge success and a wonderful triumph.
And going to be pretty interesting in the last few weeks that it's
yes,
hanging
it's
around.
It's final dance as it goes in the inner and outer rings and is getting closer and closer to the planet. The images that are coming back are spectacular.
So are you going to be watching it more closely than you're watching the eclipse?
I think I'm going to be watching the live cast from Mission Control at JPL. Yeah.
Oh, how cool. Well, I appreciate you both talking eclipse here with us today. We thought we might get into some other things, but eclipses are exciting and interesting, and it's really neat to have this coming together of people around the country thinking about this exciting event and sort of all gathering in this collective way to look up safely with special glasses. So I appreciate you guys being here. John O'Meara is an astronomer and chair of the physics department at St. Michael's College. Mark Breen is senior meteorologist at the Fairbanks Museum and Planetarium. John, Mark, thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having me.
And listeners, thank you. Please continue to tell us what you're going to be up to and let us know on August 21st, wherever you are, what you saw and what it was like. We appreciate hearing from you. You can do it on the Vermont Edition Facebook page.